so you can just, so just hold on, sir.
So hold on, we need to make one more connection, okay? Sir?
Hello, you have contacted the Arizona State Prison Complex in Yuma. Please listen carefully to the following directions as your menu has recently changed. If you know your party's 562 extension, you may dial it now. Please stay.
You cannot be transferred to this number. Check the number and try again. Wait while I transfer your call.
Yes, it sounds like you wish to participate in the hearing today for Mr. Medina. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Well, given this hold on, we're going to begin the hearing in just a moment. Let's get one of you connected here, and then the hearing will start.
Yes, sir.
No.
Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Medina, are you on the phone?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Lennon, are you still on the phone?
Yes, sir.
Okay, at this time, the Honorable Mr. Johnson is going to serve as our lead, and the next person we'll hear will be that of Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson.
Good morning, sir. How are you this morning?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So you're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. Could you please just state your full name, your ABC number for us for the record?
Johnny Medina, 046969.
Okay, Mr. Medina. Mr. Medina, at this time, I want to introduce you to the board members that are going to be conducting the hearing today, okay?
Yes, sir.
You have the Honorable David Neal, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Lai, who's our board chair. Sir, my name is Michael Johnson. I'm going to be acting as your panel lead today. Also with us today, sir, representing the Department of Correction, is Mr. Turner, representing the Department of Correction, as well as the parole office. We also have some supporters here that are going to be here. I'm going to just go through a list real quick. Ms. Ham, is everyone going to speak today?
No, sir.
Okay, I have you listed down as a consultant. I have Ms. Olivia Verdugo, the mother.
She is going to speak.
Okay, and then Antonio Verdugo, the father?
No, the mother is going to speak on behalf of both parents.
Okay, the girlfriend, Ms. Linda Martinez?
Yes.
Okay.
And the rest of the visitors will not be speaking. They're here in support.
Okay, so I'm just going to, I see that I have a Tammy Verdugo is a sister, Prince Sanchez, a brother-in-law, is it Sienna Aguilar, the niece, Mr. Joe Cecito is the uncle, and a Pearl Cecito, the aunt. I just read all those in the record, but the only ones that are speaking is Miss Olivia Verdugo, Miss Linda Martinez, and
Verdusco.
Okay, I'm sorry. Verdusco, and who else?
Mrs. Sam.
Who?
Me.
And you also have the PO parole officer here.
Wanda Phillips.
And on the phone we have, is it Mr. Luna?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Luna, are you going to be speaking?
I'm sorry, say again?
Are you going to be speaking during this hearing, sir?
Yes, if you need me to, yes.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Medina?
Yes, sir.
Sir, prior to your hearing today, you received and signed a notification from advising you of this board's hearing. Do you recall receiving and signing that form?
Yes, yes, sir.
Okay, so on that form, you were notified of the right to appear and speak on your own behalf of the hired licensed attorney to represent you. Sir, I see that Ms. Ham is here. Is Ms. Ham representing you, sir? Okay.
But I also would like to speak for myself as well.
You will get that opportunity, sir.
Okay.
Okay. All right, sir. At this time, I want to swear everybody in that's going to be able to speak. That would include Mr. Luna, Mr. Phillips, Ms. Medusco, and Ms. Martinez, along with Ms. Hamm, okay? Are you going to be speaking to Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Okay. So, do all of you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God and do you so affirm? And I'm just going to go in this item. Mr. Medina?
Yes, sir.
Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God and do you so affirm? Okay. Mr. Phillips?
I do.
Mr. Turner?
I do.
Mr. Luna?
I do.
Okay, Ms. Hamm?
Yes.
Ms. Medusco?
Yes.
And Ms. Martinez? Okay. Mr. Medina, your hearing is going to be conducted in two phases, sir. In phase one, the board will make a determination whether the terms and conditions of your community supervision have been violated. In phase two, the board will make a determination whether to revoke or reinstate you under your community supervision, sir. We're going to start out in phase one, Mr. Medina. You have two allegations listed on your warrant, sir. I am going to read each of those allegations to you. When I read the allegations to you, Mr. Medina, I need you to state whether the allegations are either true or false, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mr. Medina, the first allegation on your warrant states that you're in violation of Arizona Condition of Supervision number 13G, as demonstrated by your failure to refrain from accessing any chat rooms, social networking websites, or websites that cater to sex offenders or sex offender behavior on or about August 8, 2018. Sir, is that true or false?
I called my consultant and advised me to say no, but I did sign those conditions, yes.
No.
So it's false?
Correct.
Okay, all right. Okay, so the second allegation on your warrant states that you're in violation of Arizona Condition of Supervision number 13H, as demonstrated by your failure to refrain from viewing, purchasing, possessing any pornography, sexual stimulating material products, or entering into any adult establishment of any kind on or about August 8, 2018. Sir, is that true or false?
Again, my consultant asked me to say no.
Okay, so that's when you said no, it's false.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so based on the that you're stating that both allegation one and two are false, I am going to go to the parole officer. I don't know if it's going to be you, Mr. Turner, and Mr. Phillips. Okay, so I'm going to go to Mr. Turner to get some additional information, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Allegation number one. On 1-10-2018, the inmate reported to the parole office for his intake. During intake, the inmate read, signed, and received a copy of his Arizona home arrest conditions, standard conditions, special conditions, and sex offender conditions, to include condition number 13G, to refrain from accessing any chat rooms, social networking websites, or websites that cater to sex offenders or sex offender behavior. On 8-8-2018, P.O. Phillips received an email from criminal investigator at the Yuma Complex Prison advising that he was advised by a CO3 that she had been receiving text messages almost every day from a Johnny Medina ADC number 046969 based on the information provided by the Yuma Complex CIU. The inmate was verbally directed to report into the parole office for a staffing on 8-8-2018. The inmate reported into the parole office for a staffing with P.S. Fleshman and P.O. Phillips. During the staffing, the inmate's personal cell phone was searched, and it was discovered that he had been accessing numerous social media websites to gather information about a specific CO3 that he had assigned to him from the dates of 4-1-2015 to 12-3-2015 and 6-7-2016 to 10-18-2016. The social media websites were Facebook, Social Catfish, People Finder, Instagram, and golook.com, attached photo history. During the staffing, the inmate was not forthcoming about how he obtained the CO3's personal cell phone number, PO box, and her personal photos. The inmate stated that he found them on a dating website. The inmate then stated, this is going to sound crazy, and then stated that he was spirit guide to help get out demons from people, which is why he searches for people who are in need of saving. Follow-up to number one, based on the inmate is on home arrest and has committed violations of his conditions of supervision, a warrant will be issued for the retaking of this inmate on home arrest status. Allegation number two.
Hold on, let me just do allegation number one first.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you this question. I'm not sure if you're going to answer, Ms. Medina, but what's not true about allegation number one? And Ms. Hammer, I don't know if you've instructed him not to answer that or...
I've asked him to allow me to argue that point with the board.
Okay. So...
For the record, my name is Donna Hamm, and also for the record, I'm a consultant. I am not Mr. Medina's attorney. I would like to express a couple of things to the board. First, as you know, if you go back a little bit from when you originally heard his case for parole and home arrest, Mr. Medina committed a very serious crime in 1983 and was convicted of murder. I'm sorry, 1982. It was a murder, non-sexual. There was no sexual motivation. In 1999, the legislature passed a law in Arizona, which was ARS 133821, which indicated that, which required that people who committed a crime that did not involve, that involved kidnapping, he was also convicted of kidnapping and murder. And the kidnapping part of it required that if the victim was under the age of 18, then the even if there was no sexual motivation, no sexual connotation, no sexual activity involved in the crime, that offender was required to register as a sex offender. This statute was applied retroactively to Mr. Medina's case from 1982. So we concede that the statute says he's required to register. What is at issue here today is whether the Department of Corrections is allowed to supervise him with conditions that include sex offender conditions of supervision. And the reason why we believe that that is not true is because in 2012, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is binding in Arizona, we're in the Ninth Circuit in Arizona, in a case called United States versus Betts, B-E-T-T-S, and I have a copy, if I may approach, Mr. Chairman, for each of you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
You can see on the heading that the case was decided on February 27th, 2012. And if you go to page 6, the numbers of the pages are very lightly marked on the bottom right-hand corner. I have yellow highlighted the relevant portion. This is a case where a person who was under supervision challenged his conditions of supervision because he was told, even though his crime had nothing whatsoever to do with alcohol, that he could not consume any alcohol. And the case determined, and you'll see in the yellow highlighting, and it also refers to a previous case called United States versus Weber, which is a district court case, that the conditions of supervision are not boundless. the principal statute governing a district court's ability to impose conditions concludes that the supervised release conditions are permissible only if they are reasonably related to the goal of deterrence, protection of the public, and rehabilitation of the offender, and that they involve no greater deprivation of liberty than is reasonably necessary for the purposes of supervised release. And we explained that this determination must be an individualized one based on the nature and circumstances of the offense and the history and characteristics of the defendant. The requirement of individualizations leaves no room for just a blanket policy applicable without individualized conditions, individualized consideration regarding discretionary conditions. In plain language, Mr. Medina has nothing sexual in the commission of his offense. There is no reasonable relationship between conditions of sex offender condition supervision and his offense. It is reasonable to impose conditions regarding alcohol on his offense because his offense was alcohol related. But the Department of Corrections, according to this binding case from 2012, cannot just have a blanket policy for anyone who's required to register to be under sex offender supervision. They have to take an individualized approach to this matter. And we are arguing today that Mr. Medina should not have been under sex offender conditions of supervision in the first place. He is not a sex offender. He is required to register as a sex offender, and that's different. He was not even aware. He was never in the Department of Corrections put in a sex offender unit. He was never classified as a sex offender during the time he was incarcerated. He did not learn about his requirement to register until he was released and put on supervision. And I think that's understandable because this statute was passed in 1999 and was applied retroactively to his case. So we would argue first and foremost that before the board considers whether he violated the term of his supervision, that he should not legally have been under those sex offender conditions in the first place. The Department of Corrections is required to supervise him in a reasonable manner with conditions that reasonably relate to the offense and to the characteristics of the defendant. And you can see in his history, you can go all the way back to the beginning of his criminal history, there is nothing in his criminal history which indicates that he is in any manner or definition a sex offender. If the board does not accept that he shouldn't even be under supervision as a sex offender in the first place, then I would take you to the parole statute, the revocation statute, which tells you that not only must you find that the defendant has violated a term, one or more terms of his supervision, that he was, that he did or was about to lapse into criminal ways or company. And none of the allegations in the warrant suggest that he was in violation of any law, that he was consorting in any way with criminal company. The pictures that were on his cell phone are not obscene, according to the, they're not pornography. They may be offensive to some people. And in fact, you're going to hear from his girlfriend, Linda, that she learned that the reason he had those pictures is because she is a very conservative person, and he was playing a joke on her. He was hoping to shock her, to play a joke, to have her be upset that he had pictures of women with naked breasts and a man and a woman having sexual intercourse. The United States Supreme Court has held that those pictures are not obscenity and therefore not pornography. They're adult entertainment, adult pictures, and they do not meet the definition of obscenity. His contact with someone or his attempts to contact someone in the Department of Corrections, I think you have to ask that officer why her phone number would have been available to Mr. Medina. Who gave it to him? Because if it isn't available just on a regular telephone directory, then how would he get her cell phone unless she gave it to him? That's not criminal conduct. So part B, the second prong of the statute that you have to find in order to make a revocation, is that he was about to lapse or did lapse into criminal ways or conduct, and that simply is not here. You're going to hear from his family about the way he was conducting himself on supervised release. He had a job, he had a car, had a driver's license, he had a pro-social relationship with his girlfriend. He was making headway and doing all the right things. He had no dirty UAs. So I think that we first have to look at whether he was legally being supervised. But going all the way back from that, I would ask you to look at the paperwork that he signed on August the 15th. And first, the board must deal with the fact that he did not waive his probable cause hearing. And so the board today needs to first deal with the fact that he requested a probable cause hearing, thus far has not been provided, and he needs to be asked today whether he wishes to waive the probable cause hearing before we proceed. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
That's a lot. Okay, so what I'm going to do before we ask some questions, I'm gonna get allegation number two, and then after we do allegation number two, we'll see, because I think the same thing's going to apply, Mr. Neal.
Due to the legal issues with the statutes in my district and everything else with this hearing, I think we should move to continue it until we can have legal counsel for the board at present during the hearings.
Let me hear allegation number two,
right,
and then we'll go into it. Okay, so Mr. Medina?
Yes, sir.
So I'm going to go to allegation number two and get the additional information from the parole officer on allegation number two, then we're going to have some discussion on it, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Allegation number two. On 8-8-2018, the inmate reported into the parole office for a staffing. During the staffing, a search of the inmate's personal cell phone was completed by P.O. Phillips. It was discovered that the inmate had been visiting pornographic websites such as xnxx.com and was researching a video called Coco Writing. Okay. Additionally, the inmate visited xhamster.com, lovenights.net, a program called Disc Digger was installed. And it was discovered that the inmate had numerous sexually explicit videos that had viewed and erased. The video images depicted on the inmate's phones were of two adults, one female and one male engaging in sexual acts.
And again, Mr. Chairman, panel chairman, I would reiterate the same arguments previously offered against, in defense of allegation number one. These are not pornographic sites. They are adult websites, and there's a difference. And secondly, Mr. Medina should not have been supervised as a sex offender in the first place. And had he not been under sex offender conditions, this particular condition of supervision would not have been applied to him in the first place. And we also have the probable cause issue.
I just wanted to read what he said. Ms. Hall, let me ask you a couple of questions. First one being is that he was reinstated by this board, is that correct?
He was reinstated because, as I understand it, and I wasn't involved at that time, as I understand it, there was a battery issue with his ankle bracelet, and the board found that it was not his fault. He was reinstated by a unanimous vote of the board.
Okay. And when he was reinstated, looks like on January 10th of 2018.
Yes, and I believe he actually was released in February, early February.
Okay, so but he signed this form on the 10th of 18. As one of the conditions of supervision as a sex offender. He signed that. And that condition was condition G, which says, I will not access or attempt to access directly or indirectly any internet websites of any kind whatsoever, including but not limited to social networking, website, and chat rooms in order to, in whole or in part, view or generate content or materials that may be with regards and depreciation of both minors and adults that may or could resemble be anticipated to could resemble result in or appear to be intended to cause or encourage sexual excitement or arousal or hostile behaviors or depicts social suggestive setting, poses, or attire.
Correct, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Medina does not deny that he actually signed the conditions. The question we're raising is whether those conditions, whether he was under duress to sign conditions that were illegally imposed against him because of the established case law in the Ninth Circuit, which is binding in the Arizona courts, which prohibits conditions of supervision that go beyond the scope of the characteristics of his crime, reasonably related to the characteristics of his crime or his character. And so the argument is that he should never have been required to sign those conditions. If he had refused to sign them, At the time he was told to sign them, he would have been taken into custody. And of course, the second part of that argument is that that particular condition of supervision is a bit ambiguous. We don't know what is sexually exciting or stimulating to different people. It doesn't really nail it down very well. And his purpose was to play a joke on his girlfriend because she is conservative and would have reacted to those pictures when he was going to show them to her. They only got to see each other once a month because she lives in Tucson.
Okay, so let me ask, and I'm just trying this from my own mind to be clear that I understand. So as far as the violation of 13G and, you know, being sexually explicit and what he signed for that, is the argument that he didn't, is the argument that DOC didn't have the right to, and this is what I'm understanding, didn't have the right to supervise him as a sex offender? I mean, I'm kind of hearing, is that, so that we can just be clear, is that, because I think there's a clear violation here, but are you saying that the DOC didn't have a right to supervise him as a sex offender because of this, I'm just trying to be clear. I do think that we probably need to get some legal advice, but I'm trying to just make sure I understand the legal advice that we need to get.
More precisely, Mr. Johnson, I think the argument is that he couldn't have violated the terms of supervision because they were illegally imposed in the first place. They were not conditions that were legally imposed against him in the first place. Hence, he could not have violated something that was illegally imposed. And by the way, just for the record, the reason I instructed Mr. Medina to say no, to plead not guilty in this phase one process, is so that we could have this discussion and the finding of the board prior to any finding of him being in violation, because it is our hope that the board will find that he's not in violation because the conditions were illegally imposed, and consequently there would be no need to move to phase two. So that's why we're doing this at this particular phase.
Mr. Johnson, may I make a comment?
Yes.
I just want to, as a member of the board, I would not be at all comfortable moving forward with this hearing until we have actually a legal opinion on this argument, because I think it's been taken out of the scope of our jurisdiction. We're dealing with some legal precedents here, and I wouldn't be comfortable making any type of vote until I heard from our legal counsel what the legalities are in that.
Okay, and I'm not in disagreement with that. I'm just trying to be clear on what the legality that...
May I make one more statement,
yes.
Mr. Johnson? I would like to say it would not be acceptable for the department to argue, well, this is how we handle anybody who has to register. We make them live under supervision, because Betts specifically says they have to make an individualized decision that cannot be a blanket policy. So they can't just have a blanket policy. The very last sentence of that yellow highlighted portion of Betts makes it clear that they cannot just have a blanket policy. And I don't know how many cases they have in the Department of Corrections of people who fall under this statute, where their crime had nothing to do with a sexual offense, but they have to register because of the age of the victim. They may have 100, they may have 10, but Mr. Medina's case has to be handled on an individual basis, and they have to take all the facts into consideration. And if you as board members go back through your records of his case, there is no sexual motivation and no sexual conduct which incorporated into the crimes he was committed of, and in particular the kidnapping, which caused this statute to be applied.
But you bring up a lot of issues that I have no knowledge of. I can't make, you know, decisions. I can't make legal decisions or anything else like that. So I cannot see that it would be proper to move the hearing forward until we have some legal advice, because...
The only thing I would ask is if this hearing is continued in order for the board to get legal counsel's advice, that I believe Mr. Medina was taken into custody on about August 8th, and just I would ask the board to consider the timing so that he has a timely decision within Morrissey v. Brewer. And also you have to deal with the probable cause request as well.
Exactly. Several legal issues that we need to discuss, I think, before we make any kind of a decision.
Lieutenant Sampson, I do understand that. Let me just ask one more question.
Okay.
So you talked about time. So can you explain more what you're referring to if it's continued in the time period? What are you... I'm just trying to make sure I'm clear in hearing what you're asking.
It's my understanding that under Morrissey v. Brewer, he is entitled to have a revocation decision within approximately 60 days of being taken into custody. So that would put us at approximately by October 8th to have another hearing and a decision made. I think it gives you plenty of time.
I hear you saying some things, and I'm trying to just be clear on what you're saying, so that, you know, that if we do ask, I mean, we have to get some legal determinations. With those legal determinations, I just want to be clear that we have something on record to be clear on those things that we're asking. And so, basically, according to the information that you have, the basic objection is that the conditions of the sexual offense conditions placed upon Mr. Medina were illegally imposed conditions.
Based on Betts.
And that you also have a question on the probable cause.
Right, and I think that, frankly, could be resolved by the board asking Mr. Medina today if he wishes to change his mind and waive the probable cause hearing. If he's willing to do that, that will resolve any issue that you have about a probable cause hearing.
Okay, and then you also have the 60 days, and you're saying that some response, if it's continued, that you're looking at 60 days, you were saying October 8th.
I'm just reminding you of Morrissey v. Brewer and the time frames.
Listen. Well, some of this we're going to have to get legal advice.
Right, that's what I'm just saying. So, what I'm just trying to get on record, Dr. White, is what the legal advice that we're asking, to be clear on what the response is on some of that legal advice. That's, we're not giving a response to it. But I am in agreement, Dr. White, that...
But I mean, I think two things. One is we do need to raise the question whether Mr. Medina would waive the probable cause. And I think secondly, we do need to, since we've gone this far, we do need to see if there's anything that the Department of Correction wishes to offer as a result of the hearing so far.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Medina?
Yes, sir.
So you've been able to hear the conversation that's been taking place. One of the questions is, do you wish to waive your probable cause hearing?
I was consulted to say yes.
Okay, so I understand you were consulted to say yes. What I need to know from you, sir, is yes or no, do you desire to waive your probable cause hearing?
Yes, I guess.
Okay.
That's all we need on that one.
Okay. And Mr. Phillips?
Sir, Parole Officer Mardell Phillips. I would just like to say that I would like to get the Sex Offender Compliance Unit, who extensively reviews each sex offender case and determines whether or not they sign these sex offender conditions. We could have to take like a 5-minute recess, and I can get that information.
I do understand what you're saying, Mr. Phillips. We do need to probably get that information, but if we continue this and include that information with the legal advice that we will actually get on this, because it is really beyond what I think. Well, what I, as a board member, that I think we can really do. But I am in agreement that we do need to get some legal advice and have some clarity on how do we move forward. Dr. Wright.
Yeah, we definitely need to get some legal advice. I think that I'm just wondering if Mr. Phillips would be willing to, Officer Phillips would be willing to be in agreement that we should continue this hearing at this time. I guess that's really what I'm asking. Or is he objecting to our continuing the hearing at this point?
At this point, sir, I'd like to just get a hold of the Sex Offender Compliance Unit and get their input prior to making that decision.
And you're saying it's, how long it's going to take you to get that for, sir?
Maybe 5 minutes.
I don't see why not. Then we can make that determination whether we're going to continue the hearing.
Okay. So so will we go into recess for 5 minutes so that Mr. Phillips can make that call? Do we want to just tell us done?
I'm going to assume just not. Mr. Phillips needs to exit the room, and he feel free to do that, or he can do it in here.
Okay.
And just one final correction to what Mr. Phillips said. Mr. Medina is not a sex offender. He's required to register. There's a difference. Thank you.
We do have a record and sit at the own recess until Mr. Phillips returns.
Okay. So the board's going to go on recess while we are waiting for the parole officer, Mr. Phillips, to return.